This message is brought to you by Nuveen. Nuveen has provided investment excellence for 125 years with expertise across income and alternatives. Nuveen continues to expand its capabilities while maintaining its legacy as a leading investment manager. Visit Nuveen.com to learn more. Investing involves risk. Loss of principal is possible.
Before we get into today's episode, Your Money Briefing is exploring what you need to know to become a homeowner and sustain your home. You can get early access to our series, Buying a Home and Keeping It, on WSJ Special Access, available only for WSJ subscribers. Now on to the show. Here's your money briefing for Monday, April 15th. I'm J.R. Whalen for The Wall Street Journal. A financial advisor can help you decode the markets and find smart ways to invest. But some advisors make recommendations that wind up not being in your best interest.
If I'm your advisor and I'm charging you 1% of your portfolio, I get paid more when your portfolio does well and goes up. So, you know, if I'm making good investment decisions, then that's going to benefit both you and me in tandem. With the commissions, the incentive is to sell you products, whether you actually need them, whether they're actually in your best interest or not.
We'll talk to Wall Street Journal personal finance reporter Ann Turgeson after the break.
This message is brought to you by Nuveen. Nuveen has provided investment excellence for 125 years with expertise across income and alternatives. Nuveen continues to expand its capabilities while maintaining its legacy as a leading investment manager. Visit Nuveen.com to learn more. Investing involves risk. Loss of principal is possible.
Your fee-based financial advisor's recommendations for boosting your portfolio may create conflicts that aren't in your best interest. Wall Street Journal personal finance reporter Ann Turgeson joins me. Ann, what's the difference between fees an advisor might charge and commissions?
It's become increasingly popular for advisors to charge fees rather than commissions. Now, with the commission, the way it would, you know, traditionally work is that a broker would charge you commissions. They would say, hey, I've got a stock tip for you, or I've got this great annuity I want to sell you. And they would sell you investments that they would charge a commission on for you to purchase. So that would be a sales-oriented relationship. They would have an interest in selling you products that would earn them money through commissions. But with trends in the marketplace, a lot more advisors have given up commissions, and instead they charge fees. And typically what that involves is they charge, say, about 1% of your portfolio's value annually in order to manage your portfolio and provide you with a financial plan and an ongoing relationship.
So it's not piecemeal charges like a commission would be. It's one charge per year sometimes?
It's one unified charge, and they will justify that charge by saying they provide a number of services, including financial planning, which is important for people.
Why do consumer advocates support the fee-based financial planning?
There's a feeling among both regulators and consumer advocates that the fee-based financial planning better aligns the economic interests, the financial interests of the advisor with the client. So, for example, if I'm your advisor and I'm charging you 1% of your portfolio, I get paid more when your portfolio does well and goes up. So, you know, if I'm making good investment decisions, then that's going to benefit both you and me in tandem. With the commissions, the incentive is to sell you products, whether you actually need them, whether they're actually in your best interest or not.
In your reporting, you say that sometimes fee-based structure can lead to conflicts of interest among some advisors. What kind of conflict?
There's been a lot of attention paid to the conflicts of interest that brokers face, but there's been less attention paid to the fact that fee-only advisors also face conflicts of interest. And their conflicts of interest really involve financial decisions that could potentially cause a client to reduce the size of their portfolio. For example, the big one is the decision about a mortgage. Should I carry a mortgage or do I want to, you know, pay it off early? And advisors, a lot of them do recommend paying them off early if that's what the client seems to want to do. But there is a conflict of interest that they face where if you take a big chunk of money out of your portfolio to pay off a mortgage, then you are reducing the size of your portfolio substantially and you're reducing the size of their paycheck.
But eliminating debt is important to some retirees as they approach retirement or are in retirement.
Yeah. I mean, in recent years, that mortgage decision has been a sort of a more nuanced one because a lot of retirees have very low interest rates on their mortgages. So there's a feeling that, well, if you leave the money in the stock market, you're going to earn more than you would by basically paying off that mortgage. So it is a complicated decision. A lot of advisors recommend leaving the money in the market because they feel the client can do better that way, but it's also clear that the advisor can also do better that way.
How about the decision as to when to take Social Security the first time? How does that factor into this?
I was kind of interested in this in part because there's a new study that looks at that very topic about claiming Social Security. So it looked at what type of advisor they have and when they claim Social Security. And what they found is that a decent number of people with advisors claimed at a relatively early age, which was not what the authors of a study had expected. And they expected that people who have advisors will be advised to claim later because that's often optimal claiming strategy, especially for people who are wealthier, who tend to live longer, especially for married people. The higher earner claiming later is often better. The study found that, in fact, these people were claiming earlier. And the theory is that advisor bias and conflicts of interest could be playing into this, that the advisor doesn't really want you to delay claiming because you're going to have to support yourself solely from the nest egg, which means you're going to take more money from your portfolio, which again causes the balance to go down, causes the advisor's paycheck to go down.
How can an individual investor seek out an advisor that doesn't make recommendations that might carry conflicts?
There is a breed of advisor that charges fees, but they charge hourly fees or project-based fees. So those people don't have an incentive to maximize the size of your portfolio, for better or worse. It's nice to have your advisor have that incentive, but they also don't have the incentive to make recommendations that are designed to keep money in the portfolio when there might be better uses for it.
Well, so they're getting a stream of fees along the way.
They are. But the downside to some of that is that, first of all, it's harder to find an hourly paid advisor. It's not impossible. There's networks of advisors like the XY Planning Network and the Garrett Planning Network that are significant numbers of hourly paid professionals. But that's not a model that is all that common. So it's harder to find them. Sometimes they will do a financial plan for you, but they're sort of better for people who are happy to implement that plan themselves. You can always pay them on an hourly basis to implement it, but the focus with those advisors often tends to be that they're better for people who are comfortable managing their own portfolios. And a lot of people just aren't. The takeaway from this is that people should feel comfortable with the idea of an advisor who charges, say, a 1% fee ongoing for managing their money, but they need to be aware of these potential conflicts. And when an advisor makes a recommendation, they need to probe carefully why the advisor is making that recommendation. They need to make sure that they're really comfortable with it.
That's WSJ reporter Ann Turgeson. And that's it for your Money Briefing. We'll be back tomorrow morning with WSJ's Laura Saunders to discuss what to do if you sent in your tax return, but then realize you made a mistake. This episode was produced by Ariana Osperu, with supervising producer Melanie Roy. I'm J.R. Whalen for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.